Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. That's it.
That's it, baby.
The only podcast, we're pretty sure, that brings you the best, the brightest, the strangest, the sexiest TV shows and film properties available to stream right from your home in an ocean of streaming content vying for your attention and networks. We are your lighthouse, your beacons of broadcast,
your curators of content.
Indeed. That was our old sign-on.
Beautiful.
What's old is new again.
Betwixt seasons of Stranger Things. We're here today to talk about some crossing streams, some things we've been streaming other than Stranger Things you might want to check out. You might not. I don't know. You at least like to hear about them. We're pretty sure. Right.
Yeah. You're always looking to see, you pull up your streaming networks and you spend an hour or two just going through.
And you're thinking, there's so many vying for my attention.
There's so many. If only I had a beacon of these broadcasts or a curator of this content.
Yeah. What? If only.
You have found the chocolate pudding. You have found the chocolate pudding, my
friend.
What
is chocolate pudding?
Not something good.
That sounds incredible, and I want some.
You want some chocolate pudding?
The only thing worse than that is figgy pudding, which is terrible.
Oh, man.
You can email the show at any time by typing into your whatever you're using, streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Steve, you're looking at me funny. I don't know. They could be Yahoo folks. They could be Gmail folks. They could be Outlook folks. They could be
asking Jeeves. Well, just saying whatever you're using is funny, because that opens up a whole Pandora's box of what if they're just using it. They're holding a banana right now. Like, oh, I'm streaming.
I'm trying to email.
I'm just peeling it.
That could be why we don't get more emails. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
But we do get tons of goodens.
It's a messaging problem.
Or those peel mails.
You can also subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/streamingthings. That's patreon.com/streamingthings. And become a member of our little club at a variety of tiers for different rewards. We would love you to do that, but it's not always possible. We understand that. You do get extra content, but we understand it's hard times out there. So you can always just rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening to this. Tons of you have been doing that. We're so grateful.
Your listenership is enough for us.
Indeed. Indeed. We're so very grateful to all of you. This has been such a fun experience. We love doing it. We've done this, in fact, for years, most of the time to a few hundred people during Stranger Things, a few thousand people, and had no right to expect the craziness that has been the last month or so with all the listeners that we've gotten. And we are ecstatic about it. We are ecstatic about it. In fact, we have been bequeathed some gifts that we can then pass on to you from an app called Movies Anywhere. I don't know if you've ever heard of this app. Movies Anywhere is awesome. You can pull all of your digital libraries from different places like Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, all those places. It's kind of difficult because you own different digital movies in different places. You don't even know what you have anymore. That's what was happening to me.
I've double bought a bunch of movies.
Oh, tons of them. And now that I have them all on Movies Anywhere, it's funny because I'm like, I didn't know I owned that. But yeah, so you can put them all in one app, and it actually allows you to buy movies on that app. You can stream the movies in that app. It does all kinds of cool things. You can actually have streaming parties, like Screen Pass is what they call it. So if there's a movie that you own and you want to watch it with a friend, but it's digital and you're not in the same house, you can give them a Screen Pass and let them watch the movie that you own digitally together. So that's pretty neat.
That is pretty cool. I like that.
Maybe someday we'll do that with you.
We could do something like that in the future on a different Patreon tier, maybe just watch movies together, stuff like that. But Movies Anywhere is really, really cool. And so what they've done is they've given us digital copies of four movies that are Stranger Things tangential, right? So It from 2017 that has Finn Wolfhard in it. We've got Alien from 1979, a huge influence on the show. We've got the new Firestarter film from 2022. And we've also got The Thing from 1982, also a huge influence on the show. 4K copies of all four of those films will be given to three random patrons of this show. We'll be announcing the winners of that after our Stranger Things 4 Volume 2 coverage. So just wanted to shout out there something a little nice that we can do for you thanks to Movies Anywhere. So that's awesome. Anything else we need to talk about business-wise?
No, I think you covered it all. Again, good job, my friend.
As you all know, they're listening to this on Hump Day, correct?
Correct.
So we're only a couple of days away from Volume 2 of Stranger Things 4. Holy shit, get hyped.
It's just, actually, it's just one more sleep for me.
Yeah, one sleep.
One more sleep for us.
Yeah, because we're not sleeping that night.
No, we're not sleeping Thursday into Friday.
Whoo, boy. We get sleepy, though,
Hoo-wee. Afterward.
Oh, boy. Was that Mr. Poopy Butthole?
That was. Hoo-wee. I'm going to stay up all night and watch Stranger Things. Hoo-wee.
So that's going to be really, really exciting at that time. And we're so hyped for it. So hyped to join you guys again. And that's just like one sleep away if you're going to stay up all night.
Hell yeah, baby.
Because it's 3 a.m. in Eastern Standard Time where we are. Mm-hmm. Not an easy task. Not an easy task at all.
But what are we doing today, Chris?
Today, we're talking about all those other things we've been streaming. And so let's start it off. Andy, you always start us off. What have you been streaming?
Am I going first?
We're going to start doing it. I thought I'd switch it up and have you go first.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I got a big one that I've been streaming. It's currently the number one trending thing on Netflix. Have you guys heard about Spiderhead?
I have heard about it. It's the newest film with Chris Hemsworth and Miles Teller. And if the director is the same guy who directed Top Gun Maverick. I forget his name.
You absolutely crushed it, my dude. But that's exactly what it is.
I didn't watch it, though.
I also don't know what the director's name, and I apologize for that, you queued me up for something that I just was
it's
not
It's almost
ready.
Like Krasinski, but it's not. It's
you set up
like
the pins, and I did not have a ball.
Nobody knocked him down. It's okay. Gutter ball.
It's cool.
It happens a lot when I bowl.
So anyway, fun fact, Spiderhead is based on a short story by George Saunders called Escape from Spiderhead. George Saunders is a master of the short story art form. He's been published in
like T.C. Boyle.
Yes, exactly. He's been published in like New York Times, I think a dozen times or more.
The New York dozen times is what he calls it.
He has quite a few collections of short stories. He's only written one novel. That one novel won the Man Booker Award. It came out in 2017. It was called Lincoln and the Bardo. It was this really cool, surreal, supernatural story about ghosts surviving after they're dead and hanging out in the graveyard, kind of like the graveyard tale from Neil Gaiman. But George Saunders has this very unique, specific style of writing that's genius and often sexual and very, very life-affirming. It's wonderful the way that he writes.
So that's anyway. What people describe me as, genius and often sexual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every and time I bring as well.
I mean, so many iTunes reviews for Steve specifically that just say that.
Genius, so often sexual.
Honestly, when Spiderhead got announced, I didn't give a fuck. I was just like, all right, it's two of the hottest people in Hollywood right now, and they're doing a thing on Netflix. I don't give a shit. And then I was like, oh, it's a George Saunders story. Let's go. So it is a really cool kind of surreal sci-fi story about prisoners who give up their life rights and agree to take part in scientific trials of new pharmaceutical drugs in exchange for shorter sentences. And Miles Teller plays a prisoner of this establishment, wherein he is treated to some extraordinary tests with new drugs, with the people around him, and how he reacts to the drugs, how he reacts around, how they react to each other. And ultimately, Chris Hemsworth, who plays the lead kind of big bad, kind of good guy, scientist, he is experimenting, trying to develop a drug that can overcome the concept of love. And it is really, 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 really good until it gets to the third act. And then it falls apart so fucking bad, worse than I've seen in a movie in a really long time, and suddenly starts to try to be fun and exciting and starts playing this wonky music. And it's like, hey, now we're going to throw Halls and Oates in here all of a sudden, and we're going to have a fun, weird, action-packed third act that just completely falls apart. And I've read the short story, Escape from Spiderhead, and it is not even remotely close. And all of the best parts.
Was the short story good?
It's fantastic. Very bleak, but beautiful. Everything that is good in this movie comes directly from the short story. There is a sequence where Miles Teller is under the influence of one of the pharmaceutical drugs that is being tested, watching another prisoner being tested on another drug. He's being tested on something that essentially makes you loquacious. It makes you
loquacious.
It makes you say more descriptive on what's going on around you. And it's beautiful. He's watching somebody that's going through absolute hell. It's called Darkenflox, the drug that this other prisoner is on. And like the words that he uses to describe and the way that they wrote it and edited it was absolutely brilliant. And this came directly from the short story, and it's beautiful. It just falls apart so fucking bad when it gets to the end that I don't know that I recommend it, but I do recommend the story. George Saunders is a great writer, and I think that more things need to be adapted from what he's established. But it's so cool that they took something that seemingly unadaptable, the writing, and they made something, and it's pretty fucking cool. And they got Chris Hemsworth and Miles Teller, and that's incredible.
During the Summer of the Goose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I thought it was the Summer of Morbius.
It's Morbin time, baby.
Have you guys seen the petitions online where they want Morbius to come back into theaters for a third time?
Yes.
And the description is, sorry, we were busy that weekend. We really want you to bring it back.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be awesome. But honestly, you should check out Spiderhead, just if nothing else, to support the adaptation of wonderful source material, because George Saunders is a great author.
Awesome. Yeah, I have heard that it's a pretty shitty movie, but a similar criticism that really it just falls apart.
It's a great movie that falls apart.
The director is Joseph Kosinski.
I knew it. Oh, I said it sounded like Krasinski.
Yeah.
Steve, what have you been streaming?
Well, as the people know, we did an episode for the patrons on The Thing, 1982's The Thing.
We did.
And I decided to watch 2011's The Thing.
You did it.
I did it, my friend. Because With the Swedes, it's a prequel to the original 1982 film by John Carpenter. And, you know, this movie, I'd never seen it before. And a lot of people kind of give it shit. They're like, oh, it's a terrible movie. You know, I can't believe they did it. And part of me was curious, like, you know, is it really that bad of a movie? Or is it simply one of those things where people are comparing it to the original The Thing, and which is just such a seminal work of movie making, right? That's such a lauded piece of cinema. So people are comparing this modern take and like, oh, it's nowhere near as bad as that. It's trash, bro. And I wondered, like, oh, okay, well, let me watch this movie and see for myself. Like, is it really that bad? Or is it just a movie that's just unfortunately compared to a better version of itself, right? And I'm here to say unequivocally that it is, in fact, trash.
Yes!
It's not a good movie, which is kind of baffling. It has some pretty interesting casting. Mary Elizabeth Winstead's in this. Joel Edgerton's in it. And then there's a couple. I can never pronounce his name, but Tormund Giantsbane from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Mjolnir, I think.
Christopher Hivju.
Yeah,
nailed it.
He's in it. And it... So, like, when the movie starts, it's kind of promising, right? You're like, oh, okay, this is about the Norwegian team that originally unearthed the thing, and there's so much mystery surrounding what happened to that group from the original movie. So I was really excited to see, like, oh, what did go down? And it's just not interesting, you know?
Well, it's the whole premise is uninteresting because it's like, you know what happens, and not in a Rogue One way, but it's more like they all die, like...
But it's also silly in the way that, so the original thing, there's what, nine guys? There's 10?
Yeah.
Around 10 people.
Honestly,
on a base.
Too many.
It's in the hard, first thing.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track.
Well, Andy, I'm here to tell you there's probably 25 people, 25 Norwegians, all right? So if you were like, man, there's too many people in the thing, don't worry. The prequel has you covered.
They thought what we...
Sven, too.
What you wanted was more deaths, was what they were thinking, right?
Yeah, because if there's ever a scene in this movie where someone dies, three people die.
Yeah.
It can't just be like, oh, they got...
You know, so they totally misinterpreted everything that was cool about the 1982 version.
Yeah, and one of the great things about the 1982 version is there is this constant, like, who is the thing? It could be in any one of us. And then you can kind of see there's this natural progression, like, oh, that person's the thing now. Oh, now that person's the thing now. There's something natural about how that story kind of plays out, right? With this movie, they unearth the thing. It's in the ice tomb. It just breaks out of nowhere. And the guy's like, the thing got loose. And they're like, oh no. It immediately kills like three of them. And then now it's just like, I don't know. It's weird. Like anyone could be the thing, but the way time passes, it's not believable. Like, well, how is half this team the thing all of a sudden? I don't understand when these people got separated from each other and got infected, right?
Well, three got infected right away. Couldn't it have spread and like...
No, it just straight up kills them. It doesn't try to... It tries to assimilate one of them and then it kills like other people. Like, because this thing has this... It has like the tentacles, you know, that it shoots out in the original movie. Now it's using those as like whips that like stab people
does
and kill them instantly.
Does it straight up kill anybody in the first movie?
Windows, Fuchs and Windows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, technically spread it to Windows because he started to become to turn, but it straight up murders Fuchs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It straight up murders a bunch of people in this one. And it's just confusing. It's even more confusing than the original thing of like, okay, wait, how did that person get infected all of a sudden? I don't get it. They also have characters like, Dr. Sander, he's kind of painted as the human antagonist. He's the scientist who's like, no, this is our find. Don't try to get help. We have to keep it here because it's our find. And like his arc, he's not a good villain, quote unquote. And there's this really, they add this really strange element to the story where it's like, oh, the thing, it can assimilate anything, right? Except if you have like anything artificial in your body. So if you have caps on your molars, or if you are wearing jewelry, it can't recreate that. So that becomes a big thing where instead of testing the blood, it's like, open your mouth. Let me see your molars. All right, this guy's good. He doesn't brush. You, open your mouth. Oh, he doesn't have caps in his teeth. This guy's clearly a potential thing. Put him aside. One guy even has a line like, oh, so I'm going to die because I floss? There's one cool kill in it, and that is, I forget the actor's name, Eric, I'm pulling it up, Eric Christian Olsen. He's one of those guys that shows up in movies like, oh, that's the fuckboy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those
that's
actors.
What people say when I walk into a room.
Yeah. Oh, there's the fuckboy.
Without fail.
Overall, it's not great. There's hardly any tension to this film at all, whereas the first thing has a lot of tension and is super nihilistic. And the real unfortunate thing is like when the movie ends and the credits start, that is arguably when the thing we're most interested in happens. When the credits start, that's when it's like, oh, the one guy that conveniently can't speak English is the only one left. And he's like, fellow dude that hasn't been in the movie at all, who flew in a helicopter and, hey, fly me in. We got to kill this dog that we haven't seen the whole movie. It's just suddenly a dog now. And then also,
that sucks.
And so,
there's
like,
no dogs up to that point,
pretty much. I mean, I think they show a dog once up to that point, but it's never a thing like, oh, this dog's going to be important. It's just like, oh, the dog, remember that from the movie? Yeah, the dog's happening now. Yeah. And that's intercut with the credits. So, like, it'll be like 10 seconds of that story and then directed by so and so, 10 seconds of the story starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead. It's just not great. And the special effects are really poor, because it's all digital, which is sad because the special effects group that got hired for this movie were very adamant about it being practical like the original was. But apparently the studio was like, no, audiences, modern day audiences don't like that shit. Digital. Make it all digital now.
Yeah.
And it sore mistake. Looks really bad.
So it's the Hobbit trilogy to the Lord of the Rings of the thing.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
First Hobbit was good.
And it's funny because it's the Norwegian team, right? And right off the bat, they're like, the Norwegians are talking, and then Mary Elizabeth Winstead comes up and they're like, oh, are you American? Guys, let's be polite and speak American the rest of the movie so that so as not to confuse her and Joel Edgerton, even though there are 25 of us and only two of you. But hey, we're Norwegian. We're nothing but
America's
polite.
America's the center, my friend. Yeah.
It's whatever. So not a great movie, a little disappointing, but Chris, what about you? What's the thing you watched?
Well, the thing I watched, so I've been playing this game for my TikTok channel. It's really, really fun. So I found out I've watched at the time 71 of the IMDb top 100. And I found that out just trying to, I made a couple videos about what I hadn't seen. Cause I thought like, hey, this will be really like positive, a message to put across that I'm a guy who loves film. I'm obsessed with movies. But there's a ton of huge classic, like linchpin movies that I haven't seen. And I'll just be honest about it because that might be helpful to others, right? Like, hey, there's 750,000 movies or something like that in existence. We're not going to get them all. But then I thought of a cool game I could play because there's a filter on TikTok where it puts the IMDb top 100 on your forehead. And when you tap the screen, it cycles through all of them and stops randomly on one.
Oh, that's fun.
And so I keep going until I find one I haven't seen and I watch whatever that is. And it's been a really interesting way to.
How many times do you have to tap if you've seen 70 of them so far?
Sometimes three or four is the most I've had to do, I think. And then I have to edit it because it takes a long time for it to stop on one. I'll show you sometime what it looks like. It's fun. But what's been really cool about it is like when you think to yourself, oh, I've never seen any Kurosawa films, or I've never seen any Charlie Chaplin films. I've never seen this. I've never seen that. And eventually it's like you're so overwhelmed. You're like, I'm just going to watch Biodome, you know, because that's funny, you know,
famously in the top 100. Punch.
Yeah. So it just, you know what I mean, though? It just gets overwhelming and sure, you kind of don't know where to start. Whereas with this, it forces me. It's like, you're watching this, you know what I mean? And it's kind of relieving. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I think I'm talking out my ass a little bit, but it's almost like I have so many streaming services that I can watch almost anything at the touch of my fingertips that there's too many options. And so I'll spend hours looking through all the movie options and then go to bed.
Everybody experiences that.
That's absolutely the point of crossing streams.
Right, yeah, baby.
That's the point of this show, to give the listener a little bit of a insight.
I talked before about Shudder, that the fact that they just have a Shudder channel, like something is playing. If you turn on Shudder, there's a movie.
Yeah, so relieving. Like, you don't have to put any brain power into this, man. Yeah,
exactly. Netflix has the same thing, but it's like, watch something random, and you could get, like, episode 2 of season 3 of a show you've never watched. And that's like, I don't know if this is what I'm feeling right now.
Netflix's thing that does that is weird. Yeah. But this has been fun because I know that they're all like lauded cinema, at least for this so far. So two of the movies that I'm going to talk about today are from doing that. The first one I want to talk about is called Life is Beautiful. Have either of you seen this movie?
I love this
movie. I knew it. If you hadn't seen it, I was going to be like, Steve, this is going to be one of your favorite movies of all time.
I've talked about it on the show in the past before.
Have you really?
Yeah. No, you haven't.
I probably zoned out.
100% have.
There so it's written and directed by, directed and starring Roberto Benigni, who's an Italian. This is an Italian movie. And oh my God, I love this movie. You have to watch the video I made sometime because it's really funny. It's like the third one that I did. And I do all these sparky, like, all right, guys, here's the game. Da, 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 da. And I do the like clicky shuffly thing. All right, I'm off to watch it. And then at some point I come back and I'm wearing a completely different shirt because it had been a couple days. And I'm just like floored. And I don't even know what to say. I'm like, oh my God. Because this movie is to try to describe it to Andy. It takes place right before World War II.
Okay.
In Italy. So like Mussolini's coming to power, that kind of stuff. But the first half of the movie is so whimsical and so goofy. I haven't seen much Chaplin except in clips, but there's a lot of physical comedy. It's very Chaplin-esque and I'm like having a hard time keeping up. I love subtitles, but I've never watched an Italian movie that I can think of. And they talk so fast that I'm just kind of overstimulated and overwhelmed, but giggling because it's really clever humor. Like the movie opens with the two main character. Well, the main character is Roberto Benigni's character and his friend driving in an old, you know, 1930s car and the brakes go out and they're like barreling down this tiny road. And
that's the opening.
Yeah. Oh, and he gets to like a fascist parade of people that he doesn't know that's what that is. And they're all standing in the middle of the road. So he's standing above the car going, get out of the way. And it looks like he's gesticulating the Nazi, whatever you call that. Yeah. The Heil.
The Sieg Heil, yeah. Is this the movie with Chaplin's monologue?
No, you're thinking of The Dictator.
Oh, okay.
No, this isn't a Chaplin.
There is no Chaplin movie. This isn't a Chaplin movie. It's like that. It's a physical comedy thing. And so everybody thinks that he's doing that and they're like, hey, and then so it's goofy like that.
It's like a big Mussolini joke. Yeah.
So there's so many
style.
Yeah. There's so many. Yeah. Very Mel Brooksy. And I'm laughing my ass off and I'm having a good time. And he's really in love with this woman. I don't want to spoil the movie, but things progress very, very quickly. And at a midway point at the climax of this movie, there's a time jump of about 5 or 6 years. And then things get very dark. And,
hello, Stranger Things.
Because he's Jewish, right?
He's Jewish. It starts off a little bit before World War II.
You can guess where things go.
Yeah.
But it's still so beautiful and lighthearted. And most people have seen this movie, I guess. So I'm probably tiptoeing for no reason because I was one of the last. But he has a son at this point now. They all go to the camps. And the whole movie, I'll just say it because it's part of what made it so awesome, is he's trying to hide the fact of what's going on from his son. So he's like, hey, we're going to go play a game, you know, the whole time. We're going on this great vacation. It's for your birthday. And we get to ride on the train. Isn't the train awesome? It's cool because there's no seats. There's nowhere to sit. We're all crammed in. It's super awesome. We rarely ever get to do this. And everything that happens to them is like that. And I was just bawling my eyes out the whole time.
Because you can see how hard it is on him, but he's this...
Yeah, he's totally just taking it all on himself.
And he's doing everything he can to make to shield his son from the horror of being in a concentration camp. And
what year was this made?
This was 1997. And it won Best Picture that year, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
And I think he got Best Actor or Best Director as well. He won 2 Oscars for it. It's just so, so beautiful. I read a book in college by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. And it's an existentialist book. And the whole purpose of the book, he actually went through Auschwitz and survived it and said that essentially to oversimplify a beautiful book of psychology, that he was able to find happiness and purpose in the concentration camp. And that, you know, that's the whole tenet of the philosophy of existentialism is that life inherently has no meaning. You have to put meaning in it. And that is your choice to do that. And so he was expounding upon that by saying, who better to say that than me? I was in a concentration camp. You know what I mean?
I talked about that book many, many episodes ago. And yeah, it's beautiful. The first half is kind of like what happened to me. And second half is like, here's the philosophy that I established based on that.
Yeah. And so this movie is very much about that kind of thing. It's just about perspective. And then he was able to, there's one of the last shots with Roberto Benigni in it is he's trying to, there's a soldier taking him off, you know, to, we assume, end him or whatever, right? And his son is watching, hiding, looking out at it. And his son still thinks all of this is a game. He's been able to successfully do this for weeks. And he starts like joke goose stepping for his kid as he, you know, he's walking to his doom, he thinks, but he's like, I can't let my son see me down. You know, I can't, it's giving me chills right now. Like, I was just so destroyed. This movie changed. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I did not expect that at all. Mm-hmm. I thought it was glorious. So clever. So well done. Anything you want to say about it, Steve? I mean,
no, I think you've perfectly articulated why it's such a beautiful movie. It's genuinely funny.
Yeah.
I was very heartfelt. And so when things get real, real dark, it manages to just find the beauty in humanity, even in such awful times.
Yeah.
And that's why it's such a meaningful film. And I really think, especially now in these prescient times, I think it's a movie that a lot of people should seek out, like go out of your way to find it. Especially if you have kids like you do, Chris, I think this movie will mean a lot to you.
Yeah, it destroyed me. I can't believe I hadn't seen it. I wish I'd watched it 20 years ago. I will be watching it many more times.
Where did you watch it?
So I watched it on Paramount Plus. I'm 90% sure.
Paramount what? Paramount
what?
Plus. Sorry.
Thank you. I misunderstood you there for a second.
The Plus. You realize now that there's about 40,000 people that don't know why we do that.
We don't know why we do that, Chris.
So that is Life is Beautiful.
Peacock Plus is premium or PP.
It's PP.
And it's actually, of course, it's in Italian. So it's actually called La Vita Bella. Right. I think I did that pretty well. But Life is Beautiful. Yeah.
What was the other one that you got from TikTok?
I'll talk about that next. Andy, what else have you been streaming?
Nothing else. That's kind of why I was trying to throw it back to you. I have been a busy boy. I got a new job and I'm busy.
Steve, what have you been streaming?
Well, as you guys know, a big bit of pop culture dropped this week, and that is the season finale of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Hello there.
Hello there.
I watched first two episodes. I haven't caught up, but I've heard middling. Finale's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's accurate. The first episode, I think, is really, really good. The final episode is really, really good. And everything else in between is just fine. It's fine to bad.
Oh, 100%. Some of it's actively really bad.
Yeah.
And
which
I haven't known how to talk about it on the Tiki Talk. I've stayed away from it, miles away from it.
Overall, I enjoyed my time with the show, but it's one of those things where, like, I very much like certain things about it, but there are other things about the show overall that I don't.
Some of the finale was downright breathtaking.
Yeah, the parts of the finale were
just a lot of it really, was taken really from Rebels. I later found out, like, my favorite part of it was an actual scene that they did in Rebels.
Very similar scene, yeah,
Different fight, of course, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the thing that the show's biggest fault, I think, is because originally it was supposed to be a movie. It should have been a movie, because the way they stretched it out into six episodes, you can feel it, like, trying to justify why it's that long. And because if you cut out a lot of the middle and you just sandwich the two good episodes together, you've got a damn fine Star Wars.
Hell yeah. It would be like, what's that movie that they did for Breaking Bad?
Oh, El Camino.
Yeah, it'd have been like an El Camino, and it would have been great.
Right. And Ewan McGregor's great in it. I think the little girl that plays Leia is great. I love her.
Yeah.
I love all the stuff that I like her arc. I like how
she's precocious with the capital P. Like, it's a little much at times, but she's also force sensitive.
That's Princess Leia. That's who she is. Like,
super force strong kid, like, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they nailed that character with that little girl so perfectly.
Do they hint at the force awareness in her at any point in this?
Not explicitly, but yeah. I mean, they're never like, she's force sensitive, but it's like implied, because
I wondered if there was like a Last Jedi tie-in in any way.
Not in that way. It's much more this movie, similar to what Rogue One does to A New Hope. This movie adds further context to A New Hope. And nowhere near as significant as a way, I think, as Rogue One does. But it does add that layer of flavor to that movie, which I think is nice to have.
I think it kind of overly complicates and doesn't match up with A New Hope, whereas Rogue One doesn't have that issue. Like, there's no... Okay, don't make me do this. Stop me.
Go what, hope? Hard.
There's no sense watching A New Hope that Uncle Fuckwad and Beru,
Uncle Owen and
Beru, are anything like how they're presented in this show, right?
Agree with that.
It almost doesn't make any sense.
They're farmers on Tatooine. It's implied that they have to be somewhat hard people. And they don't do anything.
Beru comes off as a somewhat hard person to you in A New Hope.
They would have to
Uncle
have been.
Owen, let the boy do cool stuff.
I'm just saying that blue milk.
Remember that time I fought off a bunch of Tusken Raiders with Migat? Like, that's...
I'm just saying.
What happened? I want to watch this show now.
I was trying to avoid a spoiler.
They would have had to have. Like, as someone who's been steeped in Star Wars lore my whole life, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru fucking did that with Tusken Raiders.
That happened from time to time.
That's old hat to me. That's not a big deal to me. Like,
sure.
And to be honest, this show, I'm going to drop some real heat on you guys. I'm real happy about the show that they gave Aunt Beru something to fucking do.
Right.
I've been begging long. Like, this poor woman doesn't, they just have her show up in episode 2. She has like a line in episode 2. In episode 3, they're like, here's this baby. And she's like, cool.
And then she's a burnt skeleton.
And then she's a, and then she's, and then she's 90, and then she's a burnt skeleton.
Right.
So I'm glad they were finally like, they made her the one that's like, Uncle Owen, you're a little bitch. Let's get our guns and let's shoot some motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Like, I like that they did that. I'm honestly happy that they did that. But overall, the last episode is like, it, there's a lot of fan service in it, but it's good fan service.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Describing be fan service, like retcon.
Oh, this is like fan service for like if you've only seen the movies.
Like, we'll tell you when we're off air because you probably won't care. It's like literally a wink at us, you know?
Oh, okay. The one thing, my biggest criticism of the show, because I don't want to get too deep into, you know, because there's a lot of story faults. There's a lot of poor editing, and I think that's evident in the first couple episodes. There's a lot of poor editing choices. The show, my two biggest gripes with the show is it has no real sense of space, like where people are at any point in time. Things just jump around. It's like, well, how the fuck did that person teleport over there? But my other biggest concern, and it's something that worries me for future Star Wars Disney projects, is this is the first time I've seen anything that they've done where I was always aware that they were filming in the volume. And listener, if you don't know, the volume is this new set that they shot like all of Mandalorian, all of Book of Boba Fett in, where they don't have to green screen shit. It's just a big giant screen that the actors are surrounded around, and they can get away with making it look like they're shooting at a desert, but really they're just on a soundstage.
It's a super dope IMAX.
Yeah, it's a really cool piece of technology. And I feel like in Mandalorian, they used it perfectly. Like, because that show looks amazing. This show, I feel like of all the shows, they skipped out on this one's budget. And I don't know why, because it's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah,
this is the one you put all the money into. There are so many scenes where it's like, okay.
The money went to Ewan McGregor. That's the answer.
But still give it more. You know what I mean? Because this will make back the money. This was the one. This is the show that everyone was hyped for. Like, yeah, there are fans of Mandalorian. But even if you haven't watched Mandalorian, you're like, well, I've seen Obi-Wan Kenobi. I like that guy. He's always telling me to hello there. I like him. But this was the one where there were so many scenes where it was clear that it's like 10 or so people standing on a flat ground. There's nothing else around them except off in the distance. So it's clear that they're just standing in an empty room where the volume is. They don't even really put that much effort into putting rocks around them. It just feels so empty and vacant, and there's no life to a lot of the scenes they're in. And that's my biggest concern and my biggest worry, because there's a lot of other silly things that happens, especially I think episode 4 is like the low point of the show for me. Probably, I think it's episode 4. Episode 5 is not much better.
There's an egregious writing thing in 3 of the episodes that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe you can speak more to some of that without getting too spoilery.
I can't.
Okay.
Because I literally have the screenshots of it. I was going to make a TikTok video just saying, because what I can talk about is I think we're at an interesting impasse. Sorry. Jeez. Where
I'm the one that's drinking, bro.
It's like, yeah, where it's like you have to defend Star Wars because there's so many crazy, toxic people that are genuinely, and I know people say, oh, you're over accusing, but there's so many genuinely racist, genuinely misogynistic people attacking these shows.
Yes.
Because they're trying to give voices to marginalized communities that don't have representation typically.
100%.
And shouldn't bother them at all, because it's about space wizards. So what the fuck are you talking about? Who cares what race the character is? Makes no sense.
Also,
right?
Who cares if other cultures and peoples get jobs?
Yeah.
Why are you so worried about that?
That's fine. Let's do this. What the fuck are you talking about? Exactly. So you want to defend it. I want to love this show because they harassed Moses Ingram, right? To the ends of the earth and made her life hell just because she got hired for a Star Wars show.
Yeah.
But
same thing they did to the woman who played Rose in the sequels.
Then I watch it.
Kelly Marie Tran.
Yeah. Kelly Marie Tran. Yeah.
And I'm like, this isn't good. Oh no. Right. And so I think that there's this overcompensation where some, and I'm not saying that people that say they like it don't actually like it. I'm not being that big of a dick, but I'm just saying there is like an overcompensation that even I feel because I want to like it. But then I'm like, this is crazy that they've put me in a situation where I feel like I need to defend Disney. I need to defend the biggest franchise of all time from the haters. Which is Star Wars. Owned by Disney, a mega corporation that by all definitions, sucks the life out of all kinds of good stuff, right? So it's like, you put me in a real fucking, like, to quote George Clooney from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, damn, we're in a tight spot, you know? And that's how I feel. I'm like, oh, I don't want to talk bad about Star Wars because it's in such a weird spot right now. And then I'll just be lumped in with some really, really creepy, weird people. And then I'm like, that's a weird feeling to have, that I don't feel like I can, this thing I could never knock down ever, I have to feel weird about talking bad about it, right?
I don't think anything you're saying is wrong, though. Like, the show, you can criticize
Just, it's a tough spot.
But there, you're 100%. There are definitely people who are being incredibly insensitive to Moses Ingram. And I think she's great in the show. Like you can argue
in the beginning, she's a little melodramatic.
Yes.
But once the parts that Andy never got to see about her motivation make everything abundantly clear, and I think it's a great performance.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the last episode, she's like, the way like she kind of pulls that together at the end is so great. I think she nails that role. And I don't think
all of the central performances are great. It's the writing, and like you pointed out, the editing is a lot of my gripe, but some of the writing is atrocious. And it's like you said, they try to stretch this movie into a show, and that's probably what happened. But I just can't believe anybody greenlit some of the decisions that were made, that multiple people put their heads together, they get paid a ton of money to do this shit, and they know this is their tentpole Star Wars thing, and they're like, nah, it's fine.
I mean, as far as writing goes, that's all of Star Wars. It's never been good writing.
Well, that's another thing I can't say, and you said it, you're a little drunk, so that's, I will put that on you, Andy. But that, I don't think Star Wars has ever been good. Some of the movies are
the
great.
Writing is,
the world building is great. The dialogue's almost always pretty shitty, and some of the plotting is almost always pretty shitty. Right. And that's, Steve's looking at me with daggers right now, but I just, I don't feel like there's any one of the movies that you can point to where I wouldn't be able to say that's the dumbest line I've ever heard. And I don't know why that's in that person's mouth. Any one of the movies, I could find one of those.
Well, even when they were making A New Hope, a lot of the actors would go to George Lucas and say, people don't say this.
And he's famously not a good director of actors.
Yeah.
And famously not a great writer of dialogue. I think. And so
You're right.
That's fine. But what made me really sour to Star Wars is when a director who's really good at those things tried to make Star Wars into something that had those elements. All the diehard Star Wars fans fucking hated it and literally tried to ruin his career. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was kind of like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm fucking out.
Well, we got Knives Out out of that. So it's cool.
Yeah, we got a bunch of Knives Out sequels. And that's the thing is, of all the Star Wars movies, Last Jedi is the one that has the best visual storytelling out of all those movies. And it's not even fucking close. And that's why it enrages me when people are like, that movie's trash. Like, really? Have you seen other movies? Have you seen episodes 1 and 2? Movies are trash.
Do you even movie, bro?
Bruh.
And that's the thing. When I was a kid, I loved even Attack of the Clones. I was like, this is fucking awesome. There's so many lightsabers and shit. You know what I mean? And that's what people always defend me. Like, dude, Star Wars does have a lot of flaws, but what you're not understanding is that those original films were intended for children. And I'm like, what you're not understanding is how many children's movies I watch on a daily basis that are fucking fire. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, have you seen Inside Out?
People say that to me too. And it's like, I don't know what you're not getting is that I know that. And my point still stands.
Yeah, I have tons of children's movies to put up against it that I still would like these things to be fixed.
And this is as someone who I objectively like all Star Wars. Like I like episode 1, I like episode 2, but I can objectively say those aren't good movies. I don't let my fandom blind me to the fact that they're not well made.
I know what you mean.
Which is why it blows my mind. Like, there were some things that people were defending of Obi-Wan Kenobi on Twitter, and I didn't respond to any of them, but I'm like, that's really what you took away from that?
Well, that's what I mean.
Okay.
I have like 7 or 8, I would call them friends. They call them mutuals, but like pretty close friends on TikTok that are like other big movie creators and stuff. And they all love Kenobi, and they make these videos like, I'm so sick of the toxic fandom and all this crazy review bombing. This is such a great show and it means the world to me. I've been crying for 2 hours. This is everything I could have possibly wanted. And, you know, and that's what I mean about, like, I partially think it's a reaction to the toxicity. So they need to protect it. And I understand that. But then it puts me in a weird spot where it's like, I don't want to be disingenuous and just hide my opinion, but I'm like, I've built this platform. I'm trying to be as positive as possible. Do I really want to just like knock this down for no reason? Like, what am I adding by just saying, hey, this is why it was shitty? So I've just stayed quiet because I'm like, why?
And if you genuinely think, like, if you're one of those people that did watch a show and you thought it was a perfect show and you were crying through all the episodes and you thought,
fucking good for you.
That's awesome. I'm very, very happy for you. I wish I was that way, because at the end of the day, again, I like this movie, or I like the show overall. I do think the first episode and last episode are leagues better than everything that happened in the middle. And to kind of spin this back around to being more positive, because we have been negative on the show so far, that last episode, there are definitely things that happen into it that I'm like, this right here, this is the Star Wars. This is
what I was excited about.
This is what I was wanting the show to be the whole time. I'm liking this a lot. I mean, I teared up in the final episode. I teared up several times because a lot of these characters do mean so much to me, and so much of my childhood and life has been anchored to these characters, especially Obi-Wan. He was always my dude. Maybe watch the first episode, skip to the last one. You're not going to miss anything much. You might see one less episode of Flea, but who cares?
That's true. Flea. You are going to miss a little bit of Flea.
Yeah, so that's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan. I'm going to skip through because we're a little longer on Star Wars. I'm going to briefly mention one that I did watch. So the other TikTok thing that I did watch, like the IMDb top 100 thing, was called Once Upon a Time in America. Have you guys seen this film?
Is that with Johnny Depp?
It is not. That is Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Oh, okay. It's a good movie, though.
It's a good character, for sure. Robert Rodriguez. Remember, he's all blind at the end.
Yeah.
No, this is Once Upon a Time in America. I think it was in 1992. It's a Sergio Leone film. The legendary Sergio Leone, and it was scored by Ennio Morricone, and it's kind of his answer to The Godfather. It's funny watching this film. Did I talk about this before, or did I just call one of you about it?
You and I talked about it at length.
Because the first time I played this game, this is the movie that came up the very first time.
You were like, motherfucker, four hours long.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, wow.
So honestly, wow. I'm not a huge fan of The Irishman anyway. I'm honestly not. I know that's a hot take.
Is it?
I think it is.
That's the Scorsese movie?
Yes.
That's way too long.
That's not a good movie.
And so the fact that this movie already existed 30 years prior, I have no idea why Scorsese wanted to make that film. It is literally the same themes and the same runtime and so much better done because Robert De Niro is only 40. So it stars Robert De Niro and James Woods, which is really funny. And then also has a glimpse of Joe Pesci and a 14-year-old Jennifer Connelly, who I didn't even recognize. I just read that later. She's a pretty big part of it.
Assassination of Jimmy Hoffa?
It is not. No. But what I mean, the theme of The Irishman was that, hey, these gangsters that we look up to, that we idolize, and we've made tons of movies about, like, people make this, like The Godfather and Goodfellas, their whole personality, right? And I've made these movies, so maybe this is my fault. So his whole, like, thing with The Irishman was, these are terrible people that die miserable and alone if they even make it to old age, right? And so that was what was neat about The Irishman. But I was like, I just don't know that I needed this journey to do that. And the same thing can be said about Once Upon a Time in America. I think what Sergio Leone was trying to say is that these are terrible fucking people that you have worshipped your entire life. And so I want to make a movie showing them from age 10 all the way up into old age doing terrible shit, and none of them are likable. And but I didn't need 4 hours to do that.
Scorsese just wanted to say those actors that used to play those terrible people were almost there with the science to make them look young again.
Right. And you know, De Niro's De Niro-ing. It's a really fucking good movie at times, but he does some like really despicable things. And I think it's on purpose, but the movie doesn't call him out on that specifically. Like he actually sexually assaults other, like the women, that treats the women in this movie terribly. It's like he sexually assaults his like love interest at the time. And then the chauffeur just takes her home, and then he like looks out at the ocean for a minute, and that's it. There's no consequences to it or anything. Like, you're still supposed to assume that he loves her. And
that's coming to terms, and now you forgive him, right?
It's so I'm watching it with my wife, and we're just both like, what is going on here? Stuff like that. But the camera work's phenomenal. So there's a funny story behind this film. I knew I said I was going to gloss over it real quick. So it's 4 hours long, and it actually goes in pieces between the different periods of their lives. It's not linear. All right. So it starts out in old age. then goes to childhood, and then goes to middle age, like the, you know, early 20s, and bounces around like that. So he'll like, he'll look through a crack in a wall, and then it'll be him as a kid when the camera pans back around, looking through the crack in the wall when he was a little kid. That's right. Cool. In and out, stuff like that. I thought that was beautifully done. Right. So what the studios did is they cut 2 hours out of it. So we're definitely not.
Well, thank God for that. Are you shitting me?
No, it was terrible though. It wouldn't work without, even though it was too long, the story still didn't work without all of that breadth. So it showed it can with a 3-hour and 50-minute runtime. It got a standing ovation for 20 minutes and all that shit that happens at Cannes. Then the studio, when they released it in theaters in
those
America,
people are just stretching their legs. Give it a break. 20 minutes.
They made it linear. They cut out 2 hours and put the childhood at the beginning, the 20-year-old stuff in the middle, and the old age stuff at the end. And the movie was fucking trash that way. You know what I mean? So it is lauded as a masterpiece now. I gave it like 3 stars or something like that because it was just a lot of gross, gross stuff in there. Anywhoozle. But what I really wanted to talk about, which I actually will end up glossing over this one, it's called I Saw the Devil. Have you guys even heard of this movie?
I absolutely know the cover art. It's like a red face with like a slash through it. Yeah, absolutely. It's a horror film, right?
I Seen the Devil.
It is kind of a horror film.
Seen this? I Seen the Devil. I haven't seen it.
It's called I Seen the Devil.
I Seen the Devil.
It's a phenomenal South Korean horror film. Kind of a horror film. It's closer to like a David Fincher film to me.
Okay.
Like Seven or something like that, right?
It's been on my radar.
It stars Choi Min-sik, who is the same star as Old Boy.
Okay.
It's the star of Old Boy, but he plays the villain in this movie. So it's about a serial killer. And so it's you know, a South Korean revenge movie is its own thing. Like Park Chan-wook did his whole revenge trilogy. It's a wonderful genre of film, but this is kind of a play on that because it's like, what does revenge actually turn you into? So the whole movie, it's phenomenal the way that it starts. It opens with a kill of the wife of our protagonist, right? And that's in the first 5 minutes. That's the premise. And he's like not a secret agent, but he's like a government official, kind of like FBI, right?
So it starts with the fridging?
Yes.
Okay.
And then he tries to catch the killer. And he catches the killer within like 20 minutes.
Dang.
And then lets him go. And then catches him again. And he's fucking with him. He's torturing him. You know what I mean? So it's like, I did not expect that. At no point did I know where this movie was going. You probably won't either. It's incredibly, incredibly well shot and brutal. The practical effects in this movie are bonkers. This is one of the most disturbing films I've ever seen. Just in the way that they do it. I mean, everything is right in your face. They don't cut, they show it. You know how, you know, Old Boy is in films like that. Like they're typically like that. Train to Busan, you know, stuff like that. But like Screwdriver through the cheek, we're showing every bit of it. We're going to keep it in there.
We're going to linger.
We're going to twist it. In, yeah. We're going to pry before
we're going to bop it.
Twist it.
We're going to pull it.
Yeah. But I thought this movie was incredible. It was such a wonder of cinematography. The performances are great. At no point did I know where it was going. Ultimately a little too bleak for me. But I understand what it was trying to do. Like, again, it was a play on the revenge thriller. Really, really, really solid film. And I recommend it very highly. I think I paid to rent it, but somebody told me it was available on Amazon Prime or something like that. I don't think so, though. Let me check real quick.
Are you calling them a liar?
Are you calling me a liar, boy? Also, I'm really offended you didn't like Once Upon a Time in America because I love America.
All of Obi-Wan Kenobi is good.
Yeah, when I type it into Just Watch, it says not available on your streaming service. Oh, it's on Tubi. That's why everybody on TikTok was mad at me because I said I'm not a Tubi guy. And everybody was like, why are you not a Tubi guy?
I forgot to mention, that's why I saw The Thing 2011 was on Tubi.
Tubi has a ton of really good foreign films, like a lot of South Korean cinema and stuff like that, which is great. I just can't stand having to watch ads.
Yeah.
And it's worth me paying $3 to not watch commercials. And especially if it's a 2-hour and 20-minute movie. It's like, come on, man. Nah. You're done. But anyway, I only have one other thing to mention, Steve. So you go ahead, buddy.
Is it The Boys?
It is.
Okay.
You talking about The Boys.
I watched The Boys.
I'm good.
So I watched all of The Boys.
I have not seen The Herogasm.
That's what I want to talk about. No spoilers of it.
I'm not up to yet.
Last night I watched The Herogasm episode. And if you are a reader of the comic books, you've been looking forward to this episode because you're like, how are they going to do that? They're not allowed to show that on TV. I don't even think on streaming.
Red wedding for Game of Thrones?
Kind of, but like with more sex than anything. Yeah.
Sweet.
It is extremely brutal. But yeah, I was really intrigued. Like, how are they going to shoot this? I know they keep pushing the envelope, but the Herogasm episode literally has a hero that has like a 40-foot dong. You know what I mean? Like that's the whole basis of a bunch of that episode of the comic, right? That issue. So they did it really, really well. Like they made it just as bonkers and offensive and everything that it needed to be, because the boys is essentially like Garth Ennis is the guy who wrote the comic books. And his whole thing is, I want to push the envelope. He's the guy who created Preacher, which is just an incredibly offensive, bonkers story. And then when he wrote The Boys, his publisher was like, hey, can you chill out a little bit? And his whole thing was, okay, now you pissed me off. I'm going to out preacher preacher. And that's a quote from the beginning of The Boys. My whole point was to out preacher preacher. And so it's just balls to the wall, crazy sex and violence was his whole like purpose, right? It's like, it's a satire of superheroes, but in no way could you put it up with The Watchmen or something like that. It's ultimately just supposed to be really offensive, you know?
So what you're describing right now is exactly why I'm disappointed so far with season three, because it feels like that. Like seasons one and two were like irreverent superhero in the real world, controlled by corporations, sociopaths with superpowers. What would they be like? And season three has felt like, so far, to me, at least in the first four episodes, whatever leading up to the Herogasm.
How can we shock you?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I would agree with that assessment.
Without having any like plot that's worth following yet. And it's just like, hey, Jensen Ackles or whatever his name is, the dude from Supernatural's in it now. That's cool.
Soldier Boy?
Yeah. And
I would say that there is a very well-defined and really intriguing plot that really takes off in the Herogasm episode, and some really interesting character work, because I've always said from day one, as a fan of the comics, it's interesting that they don't allow the characters to take Compound V, because that's what they do in the comics. And that makes them, that gives them the ability to fight the Supes. Do you watch The Boys, Steve?
I've seen the first two seasons. I haven't started the third yet.
Yeah. So you already know a little bit about what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. though, is it's like, it's very interesting that they're not able to really fight them.
Yeah.
And then the comics from issue one, they're hopped up on V, and that's how they fight the Supes. So I've been really curious how they're going to do this season, because it's all in all the trailers and stuff that's a big part of season three. And what they're doing with this, unlike the comics though, is that they're acknowledging that this is hypocritical to the extreme. They're acknowledging that this is wrong, and they're acknowledging that something's wrong. It's a flaw in their character that they would allow themselves to do this. And they're really playing up on that a lot with Huey and his relationship with Starlight. I love, love, love all of the satire and comparisons they're making to our current society. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I've enjoyed with the discourse of the show, is there's a bunch of crazy right wing guys who are like, what, Homelander's the villain?
Yeah.
It's like, what have you been watching, my guy?
Yeah. And they really hammer that home in season three. I mean, it is blatant. Like, there's a superhero that is going through marginalized communities and beating up people who aren't even committing crimes. And he goes to, quote unquote, apologize in their community. And he's really half-hearted about it. And then at some point, he's even like,
Soup Lives Matter.
Soup Lives Matter, too. And like, that's his thing, right? Like, they're not hiding it at all. And I'm so curious how certain people in this country are taking this, because they're probably real confused. I thought I liked this show. What I imagine their feelings are.
But even still, it's so funny that you have to walk up to that point for those people to realize, huh, they've been making fun of me the whole time.
Yeah, it's
like, no shit.
But they're taking all kinds of shots. There's a scene, I don't want to say too much, but I have to kind of mention it, because it's really, really funny. Maybe it'll push you to watch it super fast. But there's this little joke where there's a national tragedy, and it creeped up on me. My wife actually got it first, and she was dying laughing. And I was like, I don't get, oh. Because there's a one of the superheroes is on the screen in like a YouTube video. And then he's like, we just all got to band together. So I know it's a really terrible time in our country, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to stick together. We're going to get through it. And I'm kind of lost. And Carissa's already dying laughing. And then he goes, imagine there's no country. And then it cuts to all these real world celebrities that they hired, like Camille Nanjiani's in there. And it's hilarious. And they all do the thing that we experienced during the pandemic. And it's stuff like that that's in season three that I'm like, okay, this is fucking awesome. Like, I see what you're saying, Andy, and I agree. Like, it's a lot of it's just trumped up for shock value.
That's hysterical.
It's at the same time, it's working on me. I'm like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. Holy shit, they did that. But so that's The Boys season three. If you haven't watched the Herogasm episode yet, definitely check it out. I think it's by far the best episode of season three. They did really, really well. And that's the last thing that I've been streaming. We have nothing else to talk about.
No, that's it.
That's it. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Delving into some other properties with us. That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
All right, real quick, we're going to do this quick and dirty. It's time to thank the patrons. Does somebody else want to do this?
I'll do it for you, buddy.
All right, here, let me give you the list. Here he is, Chris. Chris is doing
the list. I'm reading the list. I'm also thankful it's not just Steve. The list, the list, the list. Thank you, Phil, Carmelita, Carrie, Inza, Cake, Katie, Jimmy, Sarah, E. Lopez, Kyle, Thomas, Shay, Steven, A. Wells, Danielle, Kimberly, Andrew, Robin, Michelle, Ashley, Jade, Mindy, David. Is this one you've been saying, Jocelyn?
Yeah.
I'm almost positive that's Jacqueline.
Well, she needs to let us know.
I think that's Jacqueline. I never saw it written before. That's Jacqueline. Amelia, Katharina, John, Jared, Orion, Jacob, Reese, Marcus 1850. That's what I'm going with. Mike, Lady Press, Cody, Gavin, Casey, Cryptoholic, AJ, Hannah, Joel, Tyler, Jessica, the Reed family, Katarina, Carlo, Adam, Jeanette, Andy, Sandra, Emily, Aaron B, Amanda, Aaron A, and Glenn. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.